Hudson Taylor, In Early Years, The Growth of the Soul, Chapter 17, Make It a Place of Springs, April through August, 1854. It was April 4th, a long day to be remembered in Shanghai on account of the Battle of Muddy Flat, an engagement between foreign troops in the Imperial soldiery. And a regular battle it was, the Chinese force amounting to 50,000 men. For some time, the attitude of the latter had been increasingly menacing towards Europeans, several of whom, including Dr. Methertz, had narrowly escaped with their lives. Under cover of operations against the native city, the imperial camps had been moved nearer and nearer to the settlement, until the foreign community, with all they possessed, was well within range of Chinese guns. Settled by the danger of their position, the councils agreed to require the removal of the camps to a greater distance, and when the time limit had been expired, their demand was not complied with, felt there was nothing for it but to open fire. And then it was only too evident that the Chinese were prepared to resist. A sharp return fire poured upon the attacking force, many of whom fell before it. Still, superior discipline and arms carried the day, and the handful of Europeans, volunteers, and Marines from the gunboats succeeded in scattering the astonished army and setting fire to the deserted camps. After this, relations were so strained that it was hardly safe for Europeans to venture beyond the protection of their own guns. At first, indeed, it seemed as though retaliation would be attempted, and the settlement was barricaded and an extra gunboat sent up. But no attack was made. The dislodged soldiery vented their rage upon the poor defenseless villagers instead, and there the matter ended. All this was not only a keen distress of mind to Hudson Taylor. It did not a little to add to the trial of his position, for just before the Battle of Muddy Flat, the way had seemed more hopeful. He had made several excursions with older missionaries into the populous plain around Shanghai, and had been much impressed with the friendliness manifested. Everywhere the foreigners and their message seemed welcome, the distracted villagers finding in their presence some hope of escape from the cruelty of both rebel and imperial soldiers. They had encouraged the thought that, away altogether from the settlement, he might find a home of his own right among the people. The danger involved would not have deterred him for a moment, and hardships would have been welcome, but enabled him to live within his income and be independent. Besides, he longed to be more in touch with the suffering poor among him, and to do what little he could to help them. With his teacher, he might be useful medically and in other ways, and still give a large part of his time to study. His hopes had risen when each fresh visit to the country, and he had been on the lookout for a suitable place to which to settle. But now all this was at an end, and even preaching excursions had to be discontinued. Foreigners were obliged to remain strictly within the limits of the settlement, and missionary work was much hampered in consequence. A journey Mr. Edkins had planned, in which Hudson Taylor was to have been his companion, had to be given up, greatly to the disappointment of both missionaries. Had we started as we intended, wrote the letter, or had this affair happened a day or two later, we should probably have been seized and beheaded by the imperialists in revenge. But God is ever with us. On his watchful protection we rely. He never forgets, never changes. It is, of course, impossible to go at all into the country now, so there seems no change of my getting a place of my own at present. I would give anything for a friend with whom to consult freely. My position is so perplexing that if I had not definite promises of divine guidance to count upon, I do not know what I should do. There is, I fear, no probability of my being able to keep within my salary under present circumstances. If I had quarters of my own, I could live on rice, not bread. That would be too expensive, and drink tea without milk or sugar, which is cheap enough here. But that I cannot do now. Things are increasing in expense all the while, and dollars are getting dearer. They were at 6 and a penny when last I heard, and if we are involved in further hostilities, may rise to double that price, and yet have no more purchasing power. Well, he will provide. They are building barricades in the settlement today, in Broyd, and instead of 7 roads into it, are going to have only 3 or 4. I think we are safe, but the poor people around us are in a sad state. My teacher said yesterday, I have great fear. Turning to the right hand, I fear the rebels, and on the left, the Mandarin soldiers fill me with alarm. Truly, these are hard times to live in. What the poor man says is indeed true. I tried to comfort him as well as I could. Nothing gives me so much delight as speaking even a few words for Jesus, and I hope I shall soon be able to do so more freely. It may seem exaggerated at first sight to dwell upon the trials of Hudson Taylor's position. True, he was at the seat of war, but as far as circumstances permitted, he was living in safety and even comfort. He was so well off, apparently, that one wonders at the undertone of suffering in his letters, until a little consideration reveals another side of his experiences. The assistance received from Dr. Medhurst and other LMS missionaries was of the greatest value, and yet it gave rise to a distressing situation. If he had belonged to the society and had been preparing to work with and for them, nothing could have been better. But, as it was, he felt almost like an unfledged cuckoo, an intruder in another bird's nest, that his companionship at every meal in solitary Taya was somewhat wearisome to his generous host. He could not but feel. Not that he received anything but kindness from Dr. Lockhart and his associates, but he was not, as they were, highly educated and connected with the great denomination and important work. The preparation providentially ordered for him had been along different lines, and his religious views made him singular, while his position as a missionary was isolated and open to criticism. He had been sent out, hurried out almost by his society before his medical course was finished, in the hope of reaching the rebels at Nanking. Misled by optimistic reports about the Taiping movement, the secretaries of the CES had taken the position that to practical men in the field seems wholly absurd. It is just as natural for missionaries to be critical, apart from restraining grace, as for others. Indeed, it was not long before Hudson Taylor discovered that the Chinese Evangelization Society, with its aims and methods, was the butt of no little ridicule in Shanghai. It was keenly painful, as the gleaner came out month by month, to hear it pulled to pieces in this spirit, although he could not but acknowledge that many of the strictures were deserved. This did not make it easier, however, for the society's representative in that part of China, especially when, for the time being, he was dependent upon those who spoke and felt so strongly. He realized the weaknesses of the CES, or was coming to, no less clearly than he did, but he knew and respected many members of the committee, and to some, including the secretaries, he was attached with grateful love. This put matters in a very different light. Fellowship with them in spiritual things at Tottenham and elsewhere could never be forgotten, and even when feeling their mistakes most keenly, he longed for their atmosphere of prayer, their love of the Word of God, and earnest zeal for those souls. The influence of the world was tremendously strong in Shanghai, even in missionary circles. It was the heyday of the settlement, as regards financial and commercial opportunities. True, a temporary check had been imposed by the local rebellion, and it was still a question as to how long the disturbed state of things might continue. But the native city, once again in the hands of the imperialists, business would boom and the price of land go up, carrying all commercial undertakings forward on a flood tide of success. And so it proved before 12 months were over. Many a fortune was to be made in Shanghai in those days, and lavish expenditures on luxuries, with its attendant evils, were to be found on every hand. Among the Europeans, hardly a man of advanced age was to be seen, for it was a new world and went to Western enterprise, entered only within the last 12 years. Footnote, the Treaty of Nanking opening the five ports to Western commerce had only been signed 12 years previously, in 1842. End of the footnote. Those were the good old times when every Englishman in China was youthful. The great firms Priceley, the hospitality unbounded, and the prospect of achieving fortune with ordinary industry and luck appeared to every young fellow as assured. Footnote, Sir Thomas Sutherland, GCMG, article entitled Far Eastern Shipping 50 Years Ago in the London and China Express for November 27, 1908, 50th anniversary number. Such a state of things was not without its effect on the missionary community. The great expense of living necessitated increased salaries, and it was unavoidable that there should be a good deal of intercourse with government officials, to whom the missionaries were useful as interpreters, and with officers from the gunboat stationed at Shanghai for the protection of the settlement. Without finding fault with anything or anyone in particular, there was a general spirit of sociability that surprised Hudson Taylor a good deal. It was not what he had expected of missionary life, and fell far short of his ideal. He himself, on the other hand, did not entirely accord with the current conception of what a missionary should be. He was bright and fairly educated, but had no university or college training, had taken no medical degree, and disclaimed the title Reverend, given him at first on all hands. That he was good in earnest could easily be seen. But he was connected with no particular denomination, nor was he sent out by any special church. He expected to do medical work, but he was not a doctor. He was accustomed, evidently, to preaching and an almost pastoral care of others, and yet was not ordained. And strangest perhaps of all, though he belonged to a society that seemed well supplied with funds, his salary was insufficient and his appearance shabby compared with those by whom he was surrounded. That Hudson Taylor felt all this and felt it increasingly as time went on is not to be wondered at. He had come out with such different expectations. His one longing was to go inland and live among the people. He wanted to keep down expenses and continue the simple, self-denying life he had lived at home. To learn the language that he might win souls was his one ambition. He cared nothing, nothing at all, about worldly estimates and social pleasures, though he did long for fellowship in the things of God. With a salary of £80 a year, he found himself unable to manage upon twice that sum. So he was really poor, poor and in serious difficulty before long. And there was no one to impress the fact upon the committee at home or make them understand the situation. Then, too, he was lonely, unavoidably lonely. The missionaries with whom he lived were all a good deal older than himself, with the exception of the Burdons, who were fully occupied with their work. He could not trespass on their kindness too frequently, and having no colleague of his own, found it impossible to speak of many matters connected with the society and future developments that were on his heart. Soon he learned to mention such affairs as little as possible, but he did long for someone with whom to bring them before the throne of grace. Much as he felt his position, however, it was well for the young missionary that he could not hive off just then or attempt to live on rice and tea minus milk and sugar. He would have done it had he been his own master. He would have done anything along the lines of self-sacrifice to make the money given for missionary purposes go as far as possible. But in that unaccustomed and trying climate, it would have been a dangerous experiment during the hot season. And more than this, were there not higher purposes in view in the providential limitations imposed upon him at this time? He longed to be free and independent, and the Lord saw fit to keep him in the very opposite position, letting him learn from experience what it is to be poor and weak and indebted to others even for the necessities of life. For his own, his well-beloved son, there was no better way, and there are lessons still that can only be learned in this school. But for such circumstances, early in his missionary career, Hudson Taylor would never have been able to feel for others as it was necessary he should. By nature, he was resourceful and independent to a fault. He had sacrificed, as we have seen, the hope and ambition of years, breaking off his medical curriculum before he could obtain a degree, simply that he might be able to follow the guidance of the Lord as it came to him personally, untrammeled by obligations even to the society with which he was connected. And now, at the very opening of his new life in China, he found himself cast upon the generosity of strangers, shut up to a position as little welcome, possibly, to them as to himself, and from which there seemed for a long time to come no hope of escape. As spring advanced, his journal gave evidence of more trial and depression of spirits than could be attributed to the climate. His eyes, never strong, became inflamed through the sunshine and excessive dust, and he suffered also a great deal from headaches. In spite of this, he worked at Chinese on an average 4-5 hours every day, besides giving time to necessity correspondence. To Mr. Piercy, he wrote as fully as possible, trying to supply information that would interest readers of the Gleaner, as well as detailed statements of the condition of things around him, with a view of the future conduct of the work. From these letters, one sees how much he was beginning to feel the monotony of a young missionary's life, occupied mainly with study. There was little of interest to write about, now that he was practically restrained to the settlement, and it's clear that he was passing through that stage of weariness and disillusionment in which so many are drifting away from the Lord, their spiritual usefulness and power. What missionary does not know the temptation at such a time to let go higher ideals and sink to the level about this, about one? Prayer becomes an effort, and Bible reading distasteful. And the longing creeps in for stimulus of some kind, if it be only that of gossip or novel reading. Then the way is open for a fault-finding critical spirit, for dissatisfaction and irritability, and generally for worse backsliding most. And all this so often has its first beginnings in the almost unendurable monotony from which the young missionary finds it difficult, if not impossible, to escape. Pray for me. Pray earnestly for me, wrote Hudson Taylor to his mother earlier in April. You little know what I may be needing when you read this. And to Mr. Piercy, a few days later, may the Lord raise up and send out many laborers into this part of his vineyard and sustain those who are already here. No amount of romantic excitement can do that. There is so much that is repugnant to the flesh that nothing but the power of God can uphold his servants in such a sphere, just as his blessing alone can give them success. Thanks to good judgment and sensible home training, Hudson Taylor was in less danger than many young missionaries during those months of language study. From early childhood, he had been encouraged, as we have seen, to take an interest in nature study, his butterflies and insects being always housed with consideration, though at some cost to his parents and their limited surroundings. This stood him in good stead, for now he not only knew the value of such recreation, but also how to take it up. Ordered a cabinet for insects, runs the journal for April 25th, and worked at Chinese and photography. April 28th, very warm again. Worked at Chinese 5 hours, had a bad headache all day. Caught a few insects as a commencement of my collection. April 29th, at Chinese 6 hours. After dinner, took a walk in search of insects. Had some difficulty in getting into the settlement again, the gates being closed. Today, he wrote to his mother in May. I caught sight of a large black butterfly with swallow tail wings, the largest living butterfly I've ever seen. At first, I thought it must be a small bird, although it seemed to fly so straightly. But when it settled on a tree and I saw the splendid creature, it nearly took my breath away. It was so fine. I intend also to collect botanical specimens, but at present have no conveniency. There are some trees here that have a strange look to our eyes, being covered with blossoms before a single leaf appears. Among the wild plants, I see many old friends, the violet, forget-me-not, buttercup, clover, chickweed, dandelion, hemlock, and several common herbs. There are also wildflowers that are new to me and very pretty. In addition to working hard at Chinese this summer, he was diligently keeping up his other studies, medicine and chemistry especially, that he might not lose the benefit of his hospital course. The classics he gave as much time to as possible, and he seems always to have had some useful book on hand dealing with history, biography, or natural science. The following is a typical entry in a journal letter to his sister. Before breakfast, read Medicine, then Chinese nearly 7 hours. Before breakfast, read medicine, then Chinese nearly 7 hours. After dinner, Greek and Latin exercises each an hour. After poring over these things till one can scarcely see, it is a comfort to have a fine, clear, large-type Bible such as Aunt Hardy gave me. It is quite a luxury. Well, all these studies are necessary. Some of them, the classical languages of Europe, ought to have been mastered long ago. So it is now or never with me. But the sweetest duties of the day are those that lead to Jesus, prayer, reading, and meditation upon his precious word. Summer was now upon them, those hottest months of the year when one lives in a perpetual Turkish bath, and mosquitoes, prickly heat, and sleeplessness have to be reckoned with, as well as temperatures that for weeks together scarcely fall below 80 degrees Fahrenheit at night. It is easy to write about it, but who that has not lived through such days and nights can imagine how much grace it takes to bear the discomfort and distress without irritability and keep on steadily with the work when all one's courage seems needed just to endure. All through this trying season, however, Hudson Taylor kept up his studies, never falling below his average of 5 hours of Chinese every day. Once or twice he went into the country with Mr. Borden, risky as it was to attempt it. These are troublous times, he wrote, but we must do something. And their faith that the Lord would help them was rewarded by the welcome met with from the village people, who were only too glad to see them out again. I think I may say I have one friend now, he added, telling of a happy evening with Mr. and Mrs. Borden after one such excursion. But I do not want to go over there too often, as I am only one of his circle, and he has a wife for company. I feel the wants of a companion very much, the days spent with my teacher, but my evenings generally alone in writing or study. Letters, of course, were a great comfort, and much time was given during his first year to China to correspondency. Strangely enough, the months of June and July brought him the particular trial of hearing nothing from home, mail after mail, when he was especially longing for news. How this happened never quite appeared, for he had been written to regularly, but the letters never reached him, or if they did, it was out of their proper order and long after they were due. This, combined with the great heat and the effects of a brief but serious illness, tried into a degree that only be understood by those who have been in similar circumstances. When last mail came in, he wrote to his mother in the middle of June, after walking a mile and a half to the council on a boiling hot day and waiting nearly 2 hours, which lost me my tiffin, or midday meal, I had the pleasure of bringing up letters and papers for everyone at the mission except myself. When I found there really was nothing for me, the disappointment was so great that I felt quite sick and faint and could scarcely manage to walk home, for it was reported that we should have no other mail for 6 or 8 weeks. Another trial of those summer months, and one he felt still more keenly, was his financial position, overlooked apparently by the society. The first quarter since his arrival in China was now at an end, and on making up his accounts, he was more than troubled. His balance in hand was so small that it would be necessary to draw again very soon, and he had already spent more than $130. At that rate, his salary would be exhausted before half the year was over, and what would the committee say and think? With anxious care, he explained to Mr. Percy every item in these accounts, the first he ever sent home from China, revealing touching details as to needs he had not supplied because of his desire to save expenses as far as possible. I feel quite oppressed when I think of what a cost I am to the society, he wrote, and yet how little good I am able to accomplish. And just then, to add to his perplexity, news reached him in a roundabout way that seemed a climax to his troubles. The society was sending another missionary to Shanghai, and not a bachelor like himself, but a married man with a family. Dr. Parker, a Scotch physician, who had applied to the CES before Hudson Taylor left England, was already on his way to join him and might be expected in a few months. Glad as the young missionary would have been of such tidings under other circumstances, with Shanghai in the condition in which it was, the outlook was cause for indeed for concern. Dependent himself for shelter upon the generosity of others, what arrangements could he make for a married couple with 3 children? He hardly dared mention it to those with whom he was living, and yet the news would soon be the talk of the settlement, whether he kept silent or not. Anxiously he awaited letters from the committee explaining the situation. Surely they would send him notice in view of all that he had written of such an addition to their staff and instruct him fully how to act. But mail after mail came in with no reference to Dr. Parker's coming. Repeated requests for directions as to how to arrange for himself had as yet received no answer, and before summer was over, Hudson Taylor saw that he must act on his own initiative. Meanwhile, comments and questions were not wanting that made the position more trying. Is it true that a medical man is about to join you with the wife and family? When did you hear it? Why did you not tell us? Have you bought land? Why do you not begin to build? And so forth. To all of which no satisfactory reply was forthcoming. At first, in his perplexity, Hudson Taylor suffered as only a sensitive nature can. But when the talk was at its worst and the summer heat almost unbearable, the Lord himself drew near and comforted him. As you know, he wrote Mr. Percy in July, I have been much tried since coming here, pressed beyond measure, almost at times, but the goodness of God is never failing. In the last few days, I have enjoyed such sweet sense of his love and such a personal application of some of the promises, as though they were written or spoken directly to me, that the oil of joy has indeed been given me for mourning. I feel sure that dear friends in England have been specially remembering me in prayer, and I am truly grateful. Oh, continue to pray for me. I am so weak that difficulties seem overwhelming, and oftentimes I have to cry with Peter, save, Lord, I perish. But never does that cry go up in vain. He has a palm for every wound and is always ready to calm the troubled waters of the soul. I long much for the time when I shall be able to spread the knowledge of his grace among this people in their own language. May that time be hastened in an effectual open door before me. I hope I may be able to find a home of some kind for Dr. and Mrs. Parker on their arrival, though I cannot see how or where it will be. All the houses seem more than filled already, and new missionaries are expected out. I think it seems necessary that you should at once consider and decide upon the question of building. If we are to establish a mission in Shanghai, there is no alternative. No one can have a greater objection to building than I have, or see its disadvantages more clearly. But the question lies at present within narrow limits. There is only a given space in which we are permitted to live. An example, the settlement. And in it, all the houses are occupied or surely will be. We may or may not find those who, having been at the expense of building for themselves, are willing to accommodate us for a time to their own inconvenience. But this cannot be a permanent state of things. Those who are best able to judge see no hope of a restoration of peace for years to come. But we are all very short-sighted when we look into the futurity. The more he thought over the situation, the more he felt that there was nothing for it but to seek a native house in the Chinese part of the settlement, in which to receive the travelers who were drawing nearer every day. So in spite of overpowering heat and the lack of a sedan chair, he set about the weary search once more. It was 4 or 5 months now since he had hunted for quarters on his first arrival without finding even a room available, and if anything, the conditions seemed worse than before. Nothing he could begin to think was to be found, and but for a growing rest of heart, God, Hudson Taylor would have been almost in despair. As it was, he was learning precious lessons of his own helplessness and of almighty strength. To Miss Stacy in Tottenham, he wrote during those August days, "How sweet is the thought that we have not an high priest who cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but one who was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. Nothing is more sure than that we are wholly unable to sympathize with those in whose circumstances we have never been placed. How delightful then is the reflection that though our friends can only in part enter into our joys and sorrows, trials and discouragement, there is one ever ready to sympathize to the full, one to whom we have constant access and from whom we may receive present help in everything of need. This has been such a comfort to me when thinking and perplexed as to our residency, not for myself only, but for Dr. and Mrs. Parker. In the present state of Shanghai, there is no easy problem, there being neither native nor foreign houses unoccupied. But I have much to be thankful for. Our dear Redeemer had not where to lay his head. I have never yet been placed in that extremity. One who is really leaning on the Beloved finds it always possible to say, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. But I am so apt, like Peter, to take my eyes off the one object and look at the waves and the winds. As in that scene, however, the grace and the tenderness of Jesus are as apparent as Peter's little faith. So with us today, as soon as we turn to him, he giveth power to the weak, giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he created strength. While we depend entirely on him, we are secure and prosperous in circumstances apparently the most unfavorable. Oh, for more stability. The reading of the word and meditation of the promises have been increasingly precious to me of late. At first, I allowed my desire to acquire the language speedily to have undue prominence and deadening effect on my soul. You see from this how much I need your prayers. But now, in the grace that passes all understanding, the Lord has again caused his face to shine upon me. And to his sister Amelia, he added 2 days later, I have been puzzling my brains again about a house, etc., but to no effect. So I had made a matter of prayer and had given it entirely in the Lord's hands. And now I feel quite at peace about it. He will provide and be my guide in this and every other perplexing step. Quite at peace about it. With such serious difficulties ahead, a situation he could not meet, needs for which he had no provision and no possibility of making any, a problem he had puzzled over until he was baffled and had no effect. So I have made it a matter of prayer, is the simple, restful conclusion, and have given it entirely into the Lord's hands. He will provide and be my guide in this, as in every other perplexing step. Yes, that is how it ever has been, ever must be, with the people of God, until we are carried quite out of our depth, beyond all our own wisdom and resources. We are not more than beginners in the school of faith. Only as everything fails us and we fail ourselves, finding out how poor and weak we really are, how ignorant and helpless, do we begin to draw upon abiding strength. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, not partly in thee, and partly in himself. The devil often makes men strong in themselves to do evil, great conquerors, great acquirers of wealth and power. The Lord, on the contrary, makes his servants weak, puts him in circumstances that will show him his own nothingness, that he may lean upon the strength that is unfailing. It is a long lesson for most of us, but it cannot be passed over until deeply learned. And God himself thinks no trouble too great, no care too costly, to teach us this. Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee, and to prove thee, and to know what was in thine heart, that he might make thee known. Yes, all that long, wearisome, painful experience, infinitely well worth while in the sight of the Eternal, if it produced one mortal spiritual trait in the people he was educating. What a scale of values! At which point in our meditation, fresh light was thrown upon all this from the 84th Psalm by an aged saint drawn upon the fullness of his own experience. But no, the beloved and now departed, her, that's H-E-R-R, inspector, I-N-S-P-E-K-T-O-R, C-H-R-E-P-A-R-Gobart, and that's R-A-P-P-A-R-D-G-O-B-A-T, director of the Pilgrim Mission of St. Chris Kona near Basel, himself in early years a foreign missionary. End of footnote. Speaking to my students one day, he said, I asked them, young men, which is the longest, widest, most populous valley in the world? And they began to summons up all their geographical information to answer me. But it was not the valley of the Yangtze, the Congo, or the Mississippi. Nay, this Jamrathal, as it is in our German, the valley of Baca, a weeping, exceeds them all. For 6,000 years, we trace it back, filled all the way with an innumerable multitude. For every life passes at some time into the valley of weeping. But the point for us is not what do we suffer here, but what do we leave behind us? What have we made of it, this long, dark valley for ourselves and others? What is our attitude as we pass through its shadows? Do we desire only chiefly the shortest way out, or do we seek to find it, to make it, according to his promise, a place of springs? Here is spring and there is spring, for the blessing of others and the glory of our God. Thus it is with man, whose strength is in thee. He has learned the preciousness of this Jamrathal, and that these dry, hard places yield the springs for which hearts are thirsting the wide world over. So St. Paul in his life, what a long journey he had to make to the valley of weeping, in labors more abundant, in stripes beyond measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and day have I been in the deep, in journeying often in pearls of water, in pearls of robbers, in pearls of my own countrymen, in pearls by the heathen, in pearls of the city, in pearls of the wilderness, in pearls of the sea, in pearls among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness and watching often, in hunger and thirst, in fasting often, cold and nakedness. Besides those things that are without that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. A long journey indeed through the valley of weeping. But oh, what springs of blessing, what rain filling the pools, we drink of it still today. And is not this the meaning, dear readers, of your life and mine? In much that is hard to be understood, the Lord loves us too well to let us miss the best. He has to weaken our strength in the way to bring us into the valley of weeping, to empty, humble, and prove us that we too may know that our strength, every bit of it, is in him alone, and learn, as Hudson Taylor did, to leave ourselves entirely in his hands. So your valley of weeping shall become a place of springs. Many shall drink of the living water because you have suffered, trusted, conquered through faith in God. You go on your way as he has promised to appear at last in Zion, rejoicing before God, and in the valley of weeping remains for those that follow many a well, still springing up in blessing where your feet have trod. Hudson Taylor, in early years, The Growth of the Soul, Chapter 18, Building in Turbulent Times, August to November, 1854. It must have seemed almost too good to be true, when only 2 days after the preceding letter was written, Hudson Taylor heard of a house, and before the month was over found himself in possession of premises large enough to accommodate his expected colleagues. 5 rooms upstairs and 7 down seemed a spacious residence indeed, and though it was only a native house built of wood and very ramshackle, it was read among the people near the north gate of the Chinese city. And it did not all come about, however, as easily as the statement is made. Between August 9th and 21st, he learned many a lesson of patience, for in China these arrangements are compassed with difficulty. The house first heard of was not the one finally obtained, nor was the price first demanded one that he could or would give. And between the two lay much weary negotiation that had to be carried on through interpreters and deepened the debt he was already under to his missionary friends. So much labor and difficulty in accomplishing so ordinary a transaction opened his eyes to what really constitutes a large part of the trial of missionary life. He was reading at the time The Hand of God in History, and wrote to his sister who had given it to him, "What a very different thing it is to review the aggregate success of missions and missionaries over many years from taking part in the process itself with all its trials and discouragements. But let us be comforted. So will it be for us too at last. One smile from him will repay all the sorrows and leave a clear balance to the good of whatever has been accomplished. Oh, Amelia," he continued, "with difficulties were at their worst, one needs an anchor for one's faith, and thank God we have it. The promises of God stand sure. The Lord knoweth them that are his. How easy it is to talk about economic, the high salaries of missionaries, and all the rest. But there is more than one missionary here who hardly knows how to manage to make both ends meet. Well, if we want a city, there is one we can turn back to. But no, we will be pilgrims and strangers here, looking for a better home that is heavenly, whose builder and maker is God. Oh, that those around us have the same hope. You ask how I get over my troubles. This is the way. I take them to the Lord. Since writing the above, I have been reading my evening portion. The Old Testament part of it happens to be the 72nd and the 74th Psalms. Read them as I have if you want to see how applicable they are. I don't know how it is, but I seldom can read Scripture now without tears of joy and gratitude. I see that to be as I am, and have been since my arrival, has really been more conducive to improvement and progress than any other position would have been, though in many respects it has been painful and far from what I should have chosen for myself. Oh, for more implicit reliance on the wisdom and love of God." But even when the agreement was signed and sealed, yet much remained to be accomplished. "My house has 12 rooms," he wrote, "doors without end, passages innumerable, outhouses everywhere, and all covered with dust, filth, rubbish, and refuse. With all the outhouses, what of all the outhouses have been, I cannot imagine. There are no less than 36 of them, none of which I want or shall use. I have been getting a whole batch of doors fastened up, for however well it may suit a Chinaman to have 6 or 8 ways into his house, it does not please me at all just now. I see how to arrange it so that with one pair of gates I can shut off the dwelling itself from all the outhouses. Indoors there are 2 staircases of a sort. One of them I am having removed and a trap door screwed down. The 5 upstairs rooms are side by side, each communicating with the other by double doors, so that the middle room have not much privacy. This set of apartments I shall whitewash and fumigate thoroughly, taking one for a bedroom and another for a dining room and study. Once there, I must dig away at this fearful Shanghai dialect with its 8 tones, for which I shall need a new teacher. He will probably occupy some of the downstairs rooms, which, not being raised above the ground, are of little use for foreigners. But it was one thing to talk about cleaning the house and going into residence, and quite another to accomplish it, as Hudson Taylor was to prove. He had had no experience so far of the unsupervised Chinese workmen, and the discovery of his characteristics was discouraging. On August 22nd, for example, in spite of overpowering heat, he got a few men to clear the place and remove the rubbish enough, as he said, to have bread, a pestilence. Early next day, he was on the scene again and discovered his men absorbed in watching the bricklayers, never dreaming of setting to work themselves. Having found them plenty to do, he went to inquire about a box expected from Hong Kong. Returning in an hour, what was his surprise to find one man writing, another smoking, and the rest asleep. The third time he came, it still seemed as though nothing had been done. So I have then brought over my desk and a chair, he wrote, that afternoon, to remain in the premises, and even so they perpetually relapsed into idleness. I say, for instance, now this must be thoroughly washed. For a while there is a noise of splashing, but soon all is still. I go to see, and the man looks quite astonished when I remark that only the outside has been cleansed. Oh, he replies, you want to denim without washing? Yes, I say, I do, and return to my letter for a few minutes. Amusing, though it may seem at first, this kind of thing becomes wearisome, especially when one can get nothing else. Though trying enough in its way, all this was the least serious part of the new life he was undertaking. The unavoidable outlay weighed on his mind far more. Furnish as sparingly as he might and live as frugally, he seemed to be spending a great deal on himself. At home, he had been a collector for missions and knew what it was to receive the hard-earned pence of the poor. And now, against all his own inclinations, to be using missionary money in ways that seemed to him so lavish was indeed a trial. He would not have felt it so keenly had he been directly engaged in the missionary work, but when he could do nothing but study it was almost more than he could bear. To save the expense of the Sudan, he wrote to his mother, I have tried staying indoors altogether during the great heat, or walking out only in the evening, but several attacks of illness as well as threatenings of ague have warned me to desist. No one, I am sure, can be more anxious to avoid expense than I am. But if we are to live here at all, we must accommodate ourselves to circumstances. These things sometimes make me cry with David. My flesh and my heart faileth. But that is not his last word, and by grace I too can add, God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Though often cast down, I am where I would be, and as I would be, save for more likeness to Christ and more familiarity with the language. Still more serious than the question of expense, however, was the danger involved in his intended move. Not only was he leaving the settlement to live entirely alone among the Chinese, he was going to a house very near the imperial camp and within range of the guns of both parties. It was a position, as he well knew, of considerable danger, but no other residency had been procurable, and the time had come when something must be done. The Chinese house to which I am removing, he wrote to a friend, is in a dangerous position, being beyond the protection of the settlement, and liable to injury from both imperialists and rebels. The former have threatened to burn the street, and the latter have two cannon constantly pointing at it. My teacher, who comes from a distance, dare not go there, and as I cannot get another who speaks Mandarin at present, I shall have to commence the study of the Shanghai dialect. As I can talk with my present teacher tolerably well, it is a trial to lose him and commence again from the beginning. But as there is no hope of being able to go to Mandarin-speaking districts for several years, and the Shanghai dialect I can use as I learn, this too, no doubt, is wisely ordered. At any rate, I am thankful that my way is hedged up on every side, so that no choice is left me. I am obliged to go forward, and if you hear of my being killed or injured, do not think it a pity that I came, but thank God I was permitted to distribute some scriptures and tracts and to speak a few words in broken Chinese for him who died for me. In this spirit, then, Hudson Taylor bade farewell to the kind host who, for 6 months, had afforded him a home, and on August 30th, near the north gate of a native city, set up housekeeping on his own account. In spite of trouble, expense, loneliness, and danger, it was good to feel that he could begin little work on his own account. And the Lord, who knew the heart of his servant, responded to his longings after usefulness and blessing, meeting him at the outset of this new pathway with rich compensations of his grace. In the solitude that was now his lot, the soul began to revive again and grow. The blessing of the faraway days at Drainside seemed to come back. He lived his own life as them, the simple self-denying life that made brighter spiritual experience possible. It was now September, almost a year from the time he had left home, and his joy in being able to do something for the people around him was very great. His new teacher, happily, was an earnest Christian, and able to conduct morning and evening worship, to which all who came were made welcome. After this, there were patients to see, visitors to entertain, and housekeeping to attend to, in all of which Mr. Tsai was indispensable. But his pupil was rapidly learning useful terms and polite phrases, as well as carefully chosen sentences in which to convey the gospel. On Sundays, they went out together to distribute tracts and preach in the crowded streets. The dispensary was making many friends, and when a day school was added both for boys and girls, they had no lack of occupation. Before long, Tsai had to give all his time to these operations, and another teacher was engaged for the language. And then, with everything in working order, in his heart full of the blessing of the Lord, Hudson Taylor began to taste some of the real joys of missionary life. In this period belongs a letter to his parents, which show the cheerful, natural nature spirit in which he was working. Northgate, Shanghai, September 20, 1854. My dear father and mother, whether you weary of my letters or not, I cannot but write them. And I will take it for granted that this one, at any rate, will be welcome, as it is to inform you that the experiment made in coming to this house has been so far successful, and that now, though not doing much, I am at any rate doing something. I am glad also to say that I get on with the Shanghai dialect much better than I at first expected. Footnote. The idea of commencing a new dialect he had written a month before, August 18, is rather overwhelming, one being a tolerable dose. But if you mean to learn Chinese, you must not say, I can do it, but I can and will by the blessing of God. End of footnote. The only thing that has really troubled me has been the outlay I have had to make and that my current expenses are so great, but this is unavoidable. On first coming here, I was disposed to economize at the risk of usefulness and health, but I see now that one cannot do this with impunity, and as I have no desire to be sent home useless within 2 or 3 years, with considerable doubt as to my ever being able to return, I have been led to consider that proper care of these points is in the long run the truest economic. The Chinese house I am occupying is as good as can be obtained, and though the neighborhood is undesirable, one gets accustomed to it. If I feel lonely or timid at night, I recall some sweet promises of divine protection, turning them into prayer, and inevitably find that they compose my mind to keep it in peace. I do not neglect any precaution for safety, but keep a light burning all night and have my swimming belt blown up so that at any moment's notice I could take to the water if necessary, the planks forming the bridge between me and the settlement being removed at dark. And now I must tell you what I am doing. First, then, I have commenced the day school with 10 boys and 5 girls. 3 more boys are promised that will be coming shortly. The teacher, Tsai, is a Christian and very useful as he practices well in the local dialect. The school opens and closes with a scripture lesson and prayer. At present, I cannot do much with the children, but every day increases my power to make myself understood. As I sit in my study and hear their voices chanting over their lessons, it fills me with thankfulness I cannot begin to express. I often wish Amelia were here to take charge of the girls and gather in others. There are plenty to be found who are by no means improving by being at liberty in this neighborhood, young as they are, for it is a bad one. On this account, if I have to go out after dark, I always take a servant and a lantern. Secondly, the dispensary. I have not laid myself off for medical work, but every day brings some patients. Today, for example, being wet, only 10 have come. I am gradually learning Chinese terms for ordinary diseases, symptoms, etc., and the expressions needed in questioning patients and telling them how to take our medicines. And I find that though the amount of work I get through may be small, the labor attending it is considerable. Thirdly, our services. From the very first day in this house, I have had family prayers night and morning. All these times, the servants, teachers, size families, and any others who like to come in are present. We have had as many as 20. Today, we have had 9 in the morning and 10 at night. Those who can read do so. Verse about. And yesterday, the anniversary of my sailing from Liverpool, I commenced joining them. Of course, I make blunders, and so do 1 or 2 others, but the teachers are there to correct, and by I shall do better. On several occasions also, Tsai has accompanied me into the city to distribute tracts and scriptures. At these times, when we have gathered a few people together, Tsai has read a portion and explained it in a way that all could understand. So you see, he is very useful. All these engagements take time, and with Chinese study occupy most of the day. I also find it necessary to do some reading in medicine, surgery, and materia medica every day, and what with domestic matters and keeping a careful watch over everybody and everything, I can assure you I do not spend much time in bed, as I never go till I can keep awake no longer. The other day I had an interesting excursion to Wusong with Mr. Edkins and a young American missionary named Quaterman. We went by boat, arriving there at noon with a large supply of scriptures and tracts. Then we distributed on many junks going northward, receiving promises from not a few captains and others that they would read them and pass them on to friends in the ports to which they were traveling. Returning home in the evening, well pleased with our excursion, we were puzzled to know how we should pass the Imperial fleet in safety. They are somewhat random with their fire after dark, and might easily have taken us for natives, if not rebel spies. Mr. Atkins came to the rescue, posing that we should sing as we passed them, that they might know we were foreigners. The suggestion seemed good, and the boatmen were pleased with the idea, the only objection being that as we had already been singing a good deal, we had exhausted all the hymns and tunes we had in common, and were more than ready for a rest. Having perfected our arrangements, we approached some ships we took to be the fleet, and passed them singing lustily. But just as we were about to congratulate one another on our success, the boatmen shouted to us to recompense, as we had been mistaken in what we supposed to have been the fleet, and were just coming within range of their guns. So we had to tune up again without delay, and sang the spacious firmament on high to that beautiful tune, Creation. Unfortunately, we concluded just opposite the largest ship of the fleet. It is now quite dusk. What next? Cried Mr. Atkins, as the alarm gong struck on the board the ship. There is not a moment to lose. He then commenced singing I Know Not What. Quaterman struck up a truly American tune to Blow Ye the Trumpet Blow, while I at the same moment raised the third with all the voice I could command. The men on the warship were shouting loudly, our boat crew outgoing them if possible, and the whole thing was so ludicrous that I could control myself no longer and burst into a fit of laughter, most inappropriate to the occasion. What goes there? Was shouted from the Imperial ship. White devils, yelled our men, while we cried simultaneously, English, great English nation, and which means flower, flag, country, or America. How to choo-choo. After a little further explanation, we were allowed to pass, upon which my companions began to lecture the boatsmen for having called us white devils. The poor men, who had not yet received their day's pay, were very penitent and explained that they had been so frightened that they really did not know what they were saying and would be most careful to refrain from such expressions in future. As soon as we landed, I set off for home and found them just going to draw the last plank across the creek. Happily, I got over in time, and I was fearfully hungry and tired. My eyes, the lamp, and paper alike informed me that I must be drawing to a close, but I must not forget to tell you that the other day a Song Kianaman presented me with a couple of valuable crickets in a glass box. They require 2 freshly boiled grains of rice daily, and are kept on account of their song, which is quite different from the song made by English crickets and very pleasant. And now, good night, or rather, good morning. Ever, my dear parents, your affectionate son, J. Hudson Taylor. Mingled with joy in his new work, however, came unexpected trials, great and small, difficulties of household management, quarrels between his servants and the neighbors, anxiety about his cook who was laid up with typhus fever, disappointment with the second teacher who had to be dismissed, great discouragement about the language, and repeated attacks of illness that left him low-spirited and unfit to bear the strain of constant skirmishing so close at hand. There has been a great deal of fighting for several days, he wrote in the middle of September, and the rebels have been gathering at the bottom of the street. Of them I have little fear, but I hope there may be no counter-move on the part of the imperialists. Several cannonballs have passed so near these premises as to make me feel some trepidation for the moment. It is easy to tell whether a gun is loaded or not, as the ball makes a bzzz, which once heard is not likely to be forgotten. He was in real sorrow, too, over the illness of Mrs. Borden, who had suffered a great deal since the birth of her little daughter 3 months before. Her husband was worn out with anxiety and nursing, and for them both, Hudson Taylor felt deeply concerned. Mrs. Borden had been his chief counselor in beginning housekeeping. The very last time she went out, she had helped him with necessary purchases, full of interest in all that concerns his moving to the North Gate. And now it seemed that she could not recover. Her love for those she was leaving, in perfect submission to the will of God, touched him unspeakably. And as often as possible, he went over to relieve Mr. Borden, entering with a brother's sympathy into the anguish through which he was passing. Besides all this, he was increasingly burdened about money matters, not knowing even yet how the society would respond to his letters. Obliged to exceed his salary for the necessities of life, he had made use of a letter of credit, provided against emergencies, but was still uncertain as to how far his bills would be honored. It was a painful decision and position, and one that cost him many a wakeful night as well as many a prayer. Thus September ended, and looking back upon it, he could say, though in some ways I never passed a more anxious month in my life, I have never felt before so conscious of God's presence with me. I begin to enjoy the sweet, peaceful rest in the Lord, and in his promises experience first in home. That was the brightest part of my spiritual life, and how poor at the best. Since then I have been in a declining state, but the Lord has brought me back, and as there is no standing still in these things, I trust to go on to apprehend heights and depths, lengths and breadths of love, divine, far exceeding anything I have yet entered into. May God grant it for Jesus' sake. One cannot but be impressed by reading the letters of this period with the sacred ambition of Hudson Taylor's prayers, a subject worth pondering, if it be true that prayer molds the life and not circumstances, and that as are our deepest desires before God, so will the trend of our outward experiences be. Certainly nothing is more significant in the life before us than the longing of usefulness and likeness to the Lord he loved. Not honor or success, but usefulness, widespread usefulness, was his constant prayer. Would he have drawn back? Could he have foreseen that the only way to his fulfillment was through the furnace 7 times heated? How much preparatory work had yet to be done? His prayers were indeed to be answered beyond anything he asked or thought, but he must pray with yet fuller meaning and go through with all the training needed at the Master's hands. The iron must be tempered to steel, and his heart made stronger and more tender than others, though having loved and suffered more with God. He was pioneering a way in China, little as he or anyone else could imagine it, for hundreds were to follow. Every burden must be his, every trial known as only experience can teach it. He who was to be used of God to dry so many tears must himself weep. He who was to encourage thousands in a life of childlike trust must learn in his own case deep lessons of a father's loving care. So difficulties were permitted to gather about him, especially at first, when every impression was vivid and lasting, difficulties attended by many a deliverance to cheer him on his way. As much of his usefulness later on was to consist in helping and providing for young missionaries, it is not to be wondered at that a large part of his preparation at this time had to do with financial matters and unintentional mismanagement of the home committee. He had to learn how to do and how not to do for those who on the human side would be dependent on him, a lesson of vital importance, laying at the very foundation of his future work. Hence all his trial about a small, subtle income and large, uncertain needs, about irregularity of mails and long, unanswered letters, about rapid changing opportunities of service on the field and the slow-moving ideas and inaccessibilities of committees at home. He did his best, and the inexperienced secretaries in London did their best also, as faithful men of God. But something, somehow, was wanting, and just what it was Hudson Taylor had to discover, and later on to remedy. Seeing in this light, it need hardly be said, a special significance attached to his financial cares, in the letters in which he tells, at times, so touchingly of the exercise of mind through which he was passing, have an interest all their own. The iron, one sees it, was entering into his very soul, but from this long endurance was to spring heart's ease for many another. At the risk of some repetition, the following letter is quoted for its value in this connection and as showing how keenly he continued to feel the circumstances in which he was placed. Northgate, Shanghai, October 17, 1854. My dear parents, you wish to know all about my penury, as well as other affairs. So I am enclosing a copy of a list of expenses I am just forwarding to Mr. Pearson. As you will perceive, they so largely exceed the sum we are led to suppose would be sufficient, £80 per annum. but I am sending full details so that the secretaries can see for themselves. I shall have to draw again this year, probably next month. I am not sure that I can get credit, for my authorization from the society does not exceed £40 a quarter, and if the agents here knew that I had just received a copy of the committee's resolution stating that they will not accept bills for more than that amount, of course it could be refused. You will not wonder that anxiety about expenses and as to whether my bills will be honored or not, added to the dangers of my present position, has proved rather much for me lately. I have been very poorly for a fortnight, but am better now, though distressingly weak as yet. My cook has been ill with typhus fever for 3 weeks or more. I hope he is improving. He was better some days ago, but threw himself back by going contrary to explicit orders. You will wonder what all those discounts in my list of expenses mean. They were paid on the Fernandon dollars with which I was supplied in England, and that are not in regular circulation here. Chair coolies, another item, are indispensable in the hottest weather. Their services are mostly required in seeking a house and running to and fro from Dr. Lockhart's before I could get one. The water jars are for drinking water, which has to be fetched from the river and, being very muddy, has to settle and have the organic matter precipitated by alum before it is fit for use. Of chairs, I have only 6, the cheapest usable ones I could get. The tables are second hand. Knew they would have cost much more. Crockery is the dearest item. The whole lot in England would hardly fetch 10 shillings, for they are of many different patterns. The cups and saucers do not match, nor do the plates and dishes, while the vegetable dishes are also dissimilar. I had to take what I could get, and was thankful they were odd, for no one would have broken into a set. As to fuel, how would you like to be paying 6 and 6 pence a week for barely enough for the simplest cooking, the fire being put out as soon as done with, and have the prospect of thermometer going below down to 15 Fahrenheit within 2 months? Everything is dear in Shanghai now, Chinese as well as foreign goods. Just to think that in 7 months I have spent more than £100, it is not frightful. £200 per annual would barely cover my expenses unless the exchange falls, and other things too. The Church Missionary Society allows single men $700, about £210, at the present rate of exchange, besides paying rent, medical expenses, and a sum sufficient for a Chinese teacher and books. Saturday, October 21st, it is very cold today. I am better than I was early in the week, but still far from well. Fortunately, I have been able to buy a second-hand stove for $10 that will burn wood. A new one would have cost $30, and now having had another month's expenses to settle, I have only $12 left. What could I do? I must draw soon, and even if I can get a bill accepted here, I am in terror of it being refused by the committee, which would put me in a pretty fix. I think and study night and day, and cannot tell what to do. Last Wednesday night, a fire that seemed very near awoke me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Dressing hastily, I climbed onto the roof to ascertain if it were coming this way. Chinese houses like these, built only of wood, burn very quickly on a windy night. It was an anxious moment, for in the darkness I fancied the burning building was only 4 or 5 doors down. Just then I was praying earnestly for protection. It began to rain. The wind fell, for which I was most thankful, and gradually the fire smoldered down. But it was after 5 before I dared to go to bed again. While there on the roof, several bullets struck the buildings around me, and 2 or 3 seemed to fall on the tiles of my own house. At last, a heavy ball struck the ridge of the opposite roof, carrying away a lot of tiles and fragments of which fell around me and itself flew off obliquely. You may be sure I did not wait up there for another. The day before, a ball of that size, evidently spent, struck the roof of this house, broke some tiles, and fell at the feet of my teacher's child, who was standing in a doorway. Had he been 1/2 yard further out, it would have killed him. That was at noon. I have never passed, as you will believe, such a trying time in my life. But it is all necessary, and I feel is being made a blessing to me. I may have to leave here suddenly, but whatever happens, I do not regret coming to this house and would do it again under similar circumstances. Our society must provide better, however, for its missionaries. for this sort of thing will not do. I must now conclude, trusting that the Lord, who is precious to me in my extremities, is proving himself near also to you, with love besides me, your ever affectionate son, Hudson Taylor. That resolution of the committee, that down to bills exceeding 40 pounds a quarter, caused more pain and perplexity in their solitary representative in Shanghai than they could at all realize. Footnote. Based as it was upon his own correspondence, it was little wonder that this resolution produced a painful impression on his mind. It hurt like a wound inflicted by one with whom he had expected sympathy. In a letter to Mr. Piercy on November 2nd, he expressed himself as follows. And lastly, in reference to the resolution of June 29, 1854, your board ought to be very careful how they bind their secretaries to such a course in present times. Your missionaries are sent to a country in a state of revolution, where it is literally true that they know not what a day or an hour may bring forth. They should be well provided against contingencies before you adopt such an ultra measure, a measure that would at once and forever destroy their credit, if they have any, and compared with which their disposal upon society would not be severe. At any rate, if not accepted, such bills should not be positively refused before you hear the reasons which led to their being drawn. But more I need not say. Your hearts are in the work as well as ours. And I know you will excuse these remarks when you remember that half of the world lies between us. End of footnote. Crisp, sharp autumn weather had now set in, forecasting the bitter cold of winter. His Chinese house was not only unwarmed, but unwarmable, draughts sweeping through it mercilessly from unnumbered cracks and crevices. His blankets, only two in number, were fit for nothing but summer use, and all the clothing he had brought from home was now so shabby that he was ashamed to be seen amongst other foreigners. Yet he had far exceeded his allowance and dared not spend a penny, save for actual necessities. And to add to his perplexity, he was driven to see that the house he had secured with so much difficulty in view of the arrival of the Parkers would not be a place that they could come to even for a night. As to my position, he wrote on October 2nd, it certainly is one of great peril. On two successive nights recently, bullets had struck the roof over my head. How little difference in the direction of the gun might have rendered them fatal to me. But as the mountains are round about Jerusalem, so the Lord is on every side to protect and support me and to supply all my need, temporal as well as spiritual. I can truly say my trust is in him. When I hear guns fired near me and the whiz of the balls as they pass the house, I do feel alarmed sometimes, but a sweet still voice says inwardly, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? Awakened suddenly in the darkness by the thundering report of guns from the north gate, which shake the house, and hearing gongs sounding and firearms discharging close at hand, I have felt lonely, and my heart has palpitated painfully at times, not knowing whether my own house might not be the object of attack. But, lo, I am with you always, has quieted the troubled waters and restored peace to my soul. One night I was roused from sleep by a strong smell of burning, and finding the rooms full of smoke was not a little alarmed, for I knew the imperialists had threatened to burn all the suburbs as far as the creek. But it was only stubble burning in a field nearby, and the windows being open, the smoke had drifted in. Thoroughly ashamed of my fears, I returned to rest with a very sweet sense of the presence of my protector, the watchman of Israel. 3 weeks later, matters were even worse, and he wrote again to the secretaries. There is a great deal of firing going on here now, so much so that I am seldom able to get half a night's sleep. What Dr. Parker and his family are to do, I do not know. Their coming here, as things are now, is out of the question. This constant anxiety for them, as well as myself, together with another still more trying, the expense I am unable to avoid, is by no means of desirable addition to the difficulties of a language and climate. We have heard nothing of the Swiftshire, but she is hardly due as yet. I shall be thankful when Dr. Parker is here and we are able to consult together about the future. You will find this a much more expensive mission, I fear, than was anticipated. I shall have to draw again this month, and with all possible economics cannot alter the high rate of prices. The total expense of my first year will be little under 200 pounds, and even so I feel confident that there is no other missionary in Shanghai who will not have cost considerably more. Pray for me, for I am almost pressed beyond measure, and were It not that I find the Word of God incessantly precious and feel His presence with me. I do not know what I should do. But the Lord knew, and He had not forgotten His tried servant. At that very moment, when the swift Shure was nearing the end of her long and perilous voyage, the Lord had a home in view into which to receive the Parkers and their children. He was not shut up to the house on the North Gate Street, though Hudson Taylor was. And just in time, when lessons had been learned that he saw to be needed, the way was open to a safer residency. On the London Mission compound, through the coming of great sorrow, a little house stood empty, that in comparison Hudson Taylor's quarters offered a haven of security and peace. Shadowed as it was with the suffering of his dearest friends in China, he had not thought of it as other than their home. There he had found them in the early married life, rejoicing with them in a gift of a precious child, and shared the bereavement that in no short time left her motherless. Then he had helped Mr. Borden to leave the home from which the light had fled and take his infant daughter to the care of a chaplain's household. And still the little house at Ma Ka Kyum stood empty.